Welcome to show 118 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by sportscardradio.com. What is going on, everybody? Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Hopefully some interesting things have happened to your hobby collection over the last, or just anything interesting in general, the last couple weeks. We haven't had a podcast. I gotta say, I've been off the grid. Like, I was on vacation pretty much in January, and then came back. I was sleeping on my brother's couch. I broke my computer, and now I've moved, and I don't have my internet. I haven't had internet for a week, and so I've been off the grid, so to speak, but I have been prepping the show since towards the beginning of the month. So I have some interesting things, not necessarily sports card related, but just like sports related. So we'll talk about that. And also, we're going to have Chinese New Year. I know Chinese New Year, we've been late on our New Year's resolutions. Most people make them in January and forget about them by now. Well, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to say, hey, well, everybody's forgot about their New Year's resolutions. We're going to start making ours right now. And because the Chinese New Year was just like a couple weeks ago, and they celebrate for like 10 days and eat all this food. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to have like a little celebration after that. It's the Year of the Snake. And so we'll throw that in. I got three for the manufacturers, just one for ourselves. So that just shows you how confident we are as collectors. We only need one New Year's resolution, but we'll get three out to everybody else. So you have that to look forward to. And like I said, I've just got some bits of news here. And we're on the kind of maybe just moving right into football. We're by the if you're listening to this the week it comes out, the NFL Combine is starting and going on this week, and there'll be lots of interesting things going on around that event. We'll get to know some of these players and stuff like that. And but I wanted to dip back even a little bit further into the Super Bowl. Yeah, hey, it's been we're making New Year's resolution. We're talking about the Super Bowl, and it's like the end of February. So you know how crazy this show can be, and we're definitely doing that today. But we're going to talk about the Super Bowl just a little bit. We won't talk about the power outage and necessarily who won, who lost. But I think it was interesting. The Ravens obviously took the game down, but I, you know, we saw, you know, the end of Ray Lewis, and we saw maybe the end of Ray Rice. I saw Ray Rice's career flash in front of my eyes. He's fumbled a couple times in key playoff spots in these playoff games towards the end of the season for the Ravens. Not to say that they're going to cut him or he's gone or he's a nobody or he's washed up, but he does. The problem is he does have a talented Bernard Pierce, I believe is his name. That is nipping at his heels. And so he has a backup that's right there and has played well at it during his time. So we'll see what happens. That can always change with injuries and money and depth chart and stuff like that. But, you know, I noticed that Ray Rice, sure, he did tons of things during the season and even in the Super Bowl that helped the Ravens win. But, you know, when an athlete is making that kind of money at an expendable position, we've seen the running back turnover in the NFL is unbelievable. It always seems like there's a new top running back every year, although Arian Foster and Adrian Peterson kind of have held that down for the last couple years. You know, the next tier of guys seems to come in and out. So we'll see what happens in that situation. The Niners certainly look good. Both teams look good. Not to slam on the two teams that are two best teams in the NFL, but they both look good. They got two good head coaches, and it just seems like there is player turnover on both those rosters year after year. But it seems like the last 2 years, the Niners have certainly stepped it up. And for many, many years, the Ravens have been competitive in the AFC. So moving right along, I was listening to the Sports Card Live podcast. And most of you, if you listen to this podcast, chances are you probably tune into lots of other podcasts in the hobby. So and sports related in general. But they were talking on Sports Card Live. It's Mojo Break, Doug and Dan, and my brother Ryan is often on the show, and they bring in some guests. But they were talking about next year's football with, you know, it just doesn't seem like there's any top picks. There's certainly not any top picks that are going to be on the offensive side of the ball. And we just know as collectors and fans that just defensive players, sure, they might have a good year. They might get big once in a while, you know. Charles Woodson is a defensive player that seemed to have been collected for most of his career, but it's just more or less some of the teams he played for and things like that. But, you know, who will emerge from this draft? We've been very lucky as NFL collectors. 2010 was like Sam Bradford and Tim Tebow And there was other people in that draft. Rob Gronkowski, I think, was in that draft. 2011 was even better. You had Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert and Sam Bradford and Christian Ponder, Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, several more players that could be added to that list. And Colin Kaepernick was in that draft. And so you never know. Maybe year three, you see even more people come out of that draft. And even 2010, you could see guys emerge. And 2012 was possibly even better. I mean, a lot of people think it's better. I mean, it was the season but you had RG3 and Andrew Luck, and you had Alfred Morris towards the end of the late rounds as a running back. And it just seems like, too, there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of running backs. David Wilson comes to mind. And Doug Martin. There's a lot of players in that draft that probably will have good second years or maybe even get even better. You know, someone like Andrew Luck might even get even better, as that odd as that sounded. And RG3, I mean, similar injury as Adrian Peterson had, and we saw what Adrian Peterson could do coming back, and so I fully expect RG3 to come back and be an effective. He relied on his running ability, but I don't think he has to. I think he's a good enough passer. It seems like he's a student of the game. I think he'll be an effective quarterback if he has to play in the pocket more. Going on to the rookies, so moving into 2013, it's like, hey, man, we've had it really good for at least 3-4 years in a row now, and maybe longer than that. It's been some good seasons, so I'm sure there'll be some rookies that emerge out of this pack, and we'll see a wide receiver and a running back and maybe a quarterback. I mean, we had Russell Wilson last year. I mean, certainly people were talking about him, but not nearly as much as towards the end of the season. So I had Todd McShay. I was listening to ESPN First Draft, which is a podcast you might want to listen to. It only runs during the draft season here, the next month or two. And it's hosted by Todd McShay and Mel Kiper of ESPN. And they go through a lot of, like, I don't know who half these guys are that they're talking about. But certainly if you've listened to college or if you watch college football, you'll be familiar. But someone like me, I'll watch the Combine, and then I'll be able to listen to this podcast even more and get a better appreciation of who these guys are and who's rated high. But Todd McShay on the podcast said he expects several quarterbacks. I think he used the number 7, 7 QBs to be picked within the first 75 picks or so. So, 10% of the quarterback, you expect all of them to go to the rookie premiere photo shoot, and we'll have autographs and stuff like that. I just caution you, I heard Matt Barkley, Geno Smith, Tyler Wilson, Landry Jones, these were the names I was hearing, and not that second round. Most of them will be picked in the second round and later, and you know, Russell Wilson and Andy Dalton and Colin Kaepernick are examples of guys that have been drafted in the second round after some elite quarterbacks were taken. These will be the first quarterbacks off the board. So and we'll see what situations they go into. Certainly quarterback is an ever-changing position in the NFL, but it just seems like there are quite a few teams that have that position settled. I wouldn't say settled, but are more solidified than maybe in years past. And so it seems to be not a plethora of quarterbacks, but almost every team has someone that they can use back there. So some of these guys might not get the opportunity. You never know. We'll see what happens. But I just caution you, as an early collector of football, maybe understand that there'll be a whole season of football, and there'll be a whole year of products coming out, so you don't necessarily have to get burned early on. And the point I was making about listening, I was listening to Doug and Dan and Ryan's podcast, and they were talking about, hey, what if the rookie class kind of sucks? What if none of these quarterbacks are getting an opportunity, or none of them look that good? Maybe there's only one wide receiver, and he's just okay. He's not A.J. Green or Calvin Johnson or anything like that. And maybe there's only a running back, but he's not even as good as Alfred Morris, or Doug Martin from last year and stuff like that. So that's possible. Something like that could happen. They speculated maybe put more second year RG3, Andrew Luck type cards. And I would kind of agree to that. And also on the legend side, maybe the companies could do more of that for football, because it just seems like the last couple years, you'll open up a box and there might be four hits, and it'll be two autograph rookies and two player worn jerseys. It's all rookie hits, and you know, we don't see a whole lot of legends popping out of a product. So there's not too many. I mean, there used to be like Upper Deck Legends was a whole legend set, but I guess it does, you know, stuff like that, I guess, doesn't sell. I guess the rookies and whatever's hot, it does help move the product off the shelf. And I guess I could see why. But next year, if there's not that marquee guy, if there's not multiple marquee guys, maybe there's only one or two, it will be kind of a tough sell at the going prices that they typically get for a football product. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. Obviously, I fully expect some of these guys to emerge and maybe not be great, great players like we've seen the last couple of years. But I fully expect there'll be somebody that'll totally shock everybody with the way he's playing in the game. So that'll be interesting. Another interesting offseason. You gotta love offseason football. We've got long ways to games, but there's been lots of things like the draft and guys getting cut and re-signed and traded and stuff like that. And it does have an effect on, obviously, the football market, but more specifically, the football card market. You know, you can definitely see guys' cards going up and down depending on what the offseason buzz is. And one guy, Dennis Dixon, signed with the Philadelphia Eagles. I guess his old coach is now coaching there. Chip Kelly, I believe is his name, used to coach at Oregon, so now they're reunited. And that's kind of set Dennis Dixon on, not on fire, I would say, but definitely has given some attention to a guy's cards who really hasn't played all but maybe a backup role, I think in Pittsburgh or something like that. That's where he was before. So I thought that was interesting, and it just shows you we've got a couple more months here as we get into OTAs and mini camps, and we get, you know, maybe an injury here or there. We get a guy holding out, and certainly as we get closer to the draft, you know, you'll see movement in cards and guys don't have to play. That's the beauty of it. I love that, you know, that factor in cards is really nice to nice to be a part of, I think, because anytime they don't have to play and the cards are going kind of up and down, that makes you feel good, I guess. At least it would make me feel good. Some things that didn't make me feel good over the last couple weeks. The United States Postal Service made news a couple weeks ago about you know, suspending Saturday mail delivery, but I believe that was only for that was kind of overblown. I think that's only for like paper mail. I think you'll still get your packages and your bubble mailers and certainly your priority mail and thing like that. I don't think they're trying to scale that back. So basically it only affects TTM autographs, and chances are you are waiting 2.5 months, 3 months or longer for it. So I think an extra day or two might not be that bad. Another bad thing is they raise rates, but they're raising rates all the time. This was pretty much across the board style rate change, and really there's no positive way to spin this for anybody, but especially for you, the consumer, you, the collector. And the problem with sports cards is you're often doing lots of purchases through multiple sellers. You know, rarely can you find that one seller that has everything or most of what you're looking for. You're often buying a card here, buying a card here, buying a card here, and so you're paying all that, essentially that's taxing the hobby a little bit. Whenever they raise the rates, they're essentially taking money out of the hobby. So, you know, really, there's not much you can do. Everybody's going to just raise rates. They're going to pass that down to you as the consumer. Nobody's going to take that on themselves and, you know, pay less than what it's cost or whatever. So it's unfortunate, but, you know, the only thing you can do as a consumer is try to bundle your purchases up, I think, a little bit more. Try to find that guy that has two or three, if it's on eBay, two or three, four or five cards that you want, and it might make it more worth it. Or if you're in the higher end, if you're buying the $50 plus card, you know, a few cents here and there might is not going to hurt you that much. It really hurts for the lower end, the people buying the less than $5, $10 per card. You know, the fee increase does affect your purchases more. Last thing I wanted to just touch on briefly is my boy Jerry Buss died. This guy has been, I mean, the Lakers, for as long as I've been alive, the Lakers have been only taking very brief breaks from being one of the best teams in the league. And certainly they're having their struggles this year, but you know, you can't complain over the last, certainly since he took over as an owner. So I've heard a lot of stories about Jerry this last week, but really the thing I think we could take from him, he came from humble beginnings, and to the end of his life, this guy's living life to the fullest. This guy, you know, I know he's been out of the hospital before that, but into his old age, this guy was enjoying the high life. So you certainly look up to a guy that, you know, took advantage of every opportunity that he had, and certainly made the most of it. So that's what I get from Jerry Buss. Well, that wraps it up for this very first segment. We'll come back. Hey, it's not too late to make New Year's resolutions, especially if you're planning on keeping them throughout the year, and especially if you're making them for other people. So you can do that as far as I'm concerned, anytime you want. So we're going to be doing that, go through about four. I only got about four resolutions here. We'll go through those right after this. And we are back. Got some New Year's resolutions here to talk about. Hey, it's the Chinese New Year's, the Year of the Snake. And they celebrate for like 10 days, 2 weeks over there, eating food, giving gifts, and having fun with family. And so, hey, I don't feel like we've missed out here. You know, I did plan this podcast a week or two ago, so I was right in that Chinese New Year feel. So even though we're recording it late, we're making some New Year's resolutions, sports card style here. I've got a couple for the manufacturers and one for ourselves as collectors. First thing is keep things simple. And that could be you as a collector too. You could keep things simple as your collection and not like go crazy and buy packs of all different stuff and just buy the stuff that you really like. I think that could be a decent New Year's resolution for you as a collector. But we're talking about manufacturers here. We as collectors are perfect. We're the customer. We're always right. So we're gonna make these resolutions for the manufacturers. The people that make the cards, or they don't really even make the cards. They just kind of oversee it. I'll maybe go into that more a little bit later. But 2011, 2012 Prism. I know Panini just got like sued from Leaf because of Prism or whatever, which is kind of strange. I think that, you know, I don't know if that even Leaf's original prismatic Leaf metal cards were that revolutionary or weren't infringing on other things that I've seen in the past from other companies. So the fact that they're suing Panini is kind of funny, but anyways, that's neither here nor there. I think if Panini Prism had flopped, that even shows maybe to the more success of this product. If it had flopped, I don't think Leaf would have cared as much. But the fact that the set did so well, and here's my basis on why the set did. Because you look at the set, and there, especially the basketball. I'm really talking about the basketball. The football has just come out. But really, I think the home run was hit in basketball. It was a very simple set. You know, there's not many subsets there. There's not a whole lot going on there. And really, I think that gives us as a collector, we look at a set like that, and especially younger collectors too, that may only get $5 to $10 a week or a month as income, they look at a set like that and they're like, man, I can complete that. Maybe they can't complete the gold. You know, nobody really, unless you're on a really high budget, can complete the whole gold set. But certainly, if you were ambitious, you could get all the emeralds that are available. And you could certainly do the refractor kind of prism cards that they have. And certainly a base set and even the inserts and things of that nature. There really wasn't even that many inserts sets within Prism Basketball. And so it made it very simple. There was just parallels. There weren't any memorabilia cards, I don't think. There weren't primes and patches and subprimes. And this is kind of prime. And this is kind of a patch. And this is game worn. And this is player worn. None of that confusion. It's just a simple set. And some of the most sought after cards in that set were actually gold numbered out of 10. And they weren't even autographed. And those are some of the most desired cards in the set, in the hobby for all of basketball season. So it's good that we can get people chasing after cards that aren't just memorabilia and autographs. So I felt that that set, for many reasons, struck a nice little chorus, like a power chord on your electric guitar. It just sounds good, and it was really clean and easy. I just think that sometimes less is more, and it can attract new collectors because it's not an intimidating 10-page checklist where they're like, you know, hey, I remember in the 80s we used to try to collect all things. This would take forever. With Prism, they kind of look at it, maybe reminds them of basketball sets in the past, and it might help encourage people to collect a little bit more if things were a little bit more simple and easier to understand, easier to digest. I felt it was an easy set to digest. So keep things simple is our first New Year's resolution. You don't have to do it for every set. Obviously, it would get boring if every set was like just a punt where it was like, you know, a 200 base set and four insert sets and that's it. No jerseys and no nothing else, like two parallels. We'd get bored of that. But my keep it simple is slip a little bit more of that in. You know, maybe you can incorporate it a little bit with sets that already are out there and might not have quite the footing that's there in Prism basketball. It seems like that right in one season. So we'll see how it encores itself. We'll see how that set continues to progress in year two and three for basketball and obviously for football as well. It seems like. Next one, treat your customers better. This isn't like calling the DMV. You shouldn't like have to, when you communicate with the card company, it's like the DMV or like the cable company or like the internet. I mean, for like, I've been trying to, my internet was supposed to be live like a week ago. They send a guy out, oh, it doesn't work. They send a guy back, and then it's like, oh, it doesn't work. I got to call them, and then they can't send another guy out for 3 days. That guy comes, it doesn't work, and they got to make another appointment, and it's just really annoying as a customer because there's not much I can do. Sure, I could go to another company and go to cable or go to 4G or whatever it is. You can do it, but essentially you're probably on the same network, and they're probably just licensing it all from each other. And, you know, eventually you'll come back around as a customer, and I kind of feel like, you know, especially in the baseball card market, Topps kind of feels that way. They kind of feel like, oh, well, if you're not going to collect our cards, you know, F you kind of thing. And that's not good. We can't have that kind of attitude for one, because the job's really not that difficult to make baseball cards. They don't even really make them. They send it to some facility. They make it. And typically they package and collate it and send it out. You don't even touch the baseball cards. You could do it all from your desk, from a computer. That's what a lot of these small run sports cards, so, you know, like Leaf and stuff like that. They don't got big printing facilities and hundreds of employees and stuff like that. It's all outsourced and you don't even touch the cards. It all gets sent out for you to distributors and then they send it all out. It's like one of the easiest businesses in the world. So it's not a very difficult job. And so it shouldn't be difficult to contact them. And it shouldn't be difficult when you have a problem or have an issue for them to resolve it. You know, they can make cards. They're a manufacturer. They can have – they should – you know, typically they don't have cards there, I guess. So they can't make good for people and damage things or expired redemptions. Although I believe that some of the manufacturers try to work some things out for you on expired redemption and things of that nature. But – as a customer, we just need to demand better service. This shouldn't be like a DMV or a cable company. You know, when I call my bank like treats me like I have like I'm Warren Buffett's account or something like that. Like I have that much money in my account. I don't. You know what I mean? But they make me feel good. Any problems that I have, any issues that I have, they're there to help me, and they've got tons of customers, and I could go to any bank, you know, and maybe that's the problem. Maybe there is too much competition. Maybe there's not enough competition in sports cards, and so it lets people be complacent and think that they're, you know, like doing something great when all they're really doing is making a product. They don't even make the product. That's what's, you know, people hail people, vice presidents and people at these at Tops and Panini and any company, they don't even do anything. These guys don't even do anything. They don't. Their jobs aren't that hard. You know, they don't even touch the cards typically. It's all sent out and done, and then that's the most efficient way to do it, and that's what's being ordered down from the top. So. We should demand that their job is really just customer service. That's it. They obviously never deliver the product on time. It's always a product is announced at this date, and it's always 3 weeks later it comes out, and you pay for it as a customer. You pay for it as a dealer. You pay for it as a distributor. But they don't deliver it, you know, until 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, sometimes months later on a product that they announced months ago and, again, collected payments on from everybody. And you know, it's no big deal. Nobody cares. Nobody, like, it's just expected that, oh, this easy job of printing out cardboard with guys' pictures on it is like difficult. It's not that difficult. These companies aren't that big. We're talking, you know, we're not even talking. I mean, Pinterest was valued at $2.9 billion or something like that the other day. They got a $200 million investment. You don't see anybody investing anywhere in the millions of dollars in sports cards. It's just not one of those businesses. So these are just minute little flies on the wall in terms of Wall Street and in terms of business and companies. These guys don't mean anything. So their only business should be making you happy as a customer, because they're lucky to have any customers. So demand that as a collector. That's your resolution for not just this year, but for your whole life. Don't let these companies diggle dally and give you the runaround like they got something better to do other than to make things right for you, because that's what they're supposed to do. It's not a hard job. Moving on. More buying options at the hobby level. This has bugged me for years. Go to retail. They got the rack packs. They got the regular packs. They got even packs that come out of those gravity feet boxes. They got blaster boxes. They got hanger boxes. I've seen rack packs with special purple refractors and green refractors and orange refractors and all kinds of stuff in it. You can go to the hobby, and it's the same box structure for the last 10 to 20 to 50 years. You get one box. There's occasionally, in one sport, really, a jumbo box. And that's about it. You don't get a whole lot. You don't see a whole lot of diversity. You don't see rack packs. You don't see hanger boxes. You don't see mini boxes that much. You sometimes see mini boxes, but they're never really sold that way. They're never really – it should just be one – mini boxes shouldn't be packaged as two and sold as a hobby box, because that's what a collector is going to want. Just sell one mini box at a time to the dealer. So, you know, just some creativity there. You know, us as customers going to hobby shop, you know, it's the same choice over and over. And I know packaging is one of those businesses where if you add cost here and it's times 100,000, it's all this. But you already have the rack packs for retail. You already have it laid out. You already have the ability to make those. Put some hobby cards in there. You already make blaster boxes. Make a hobby blaster. You already make hanger boxes. Make a hobby hanger box. Put purple. Put, you know, what color haven't we used? You know, I'm not sure what color we haven't used, you know, magenta or some kind of yellow. I don't think is used that much, or some, you know, I don't know, but put a special color, pink, anything in a hobby and give them some love. Just seems like in a different package. You know, I know they get exclusive cards and they get whatever, better odds, but I don't know. More buying options, better, more packaging, different packaging. So, you know, prestige football comes out, and it's like, I got prestige football, I got prestige fat packs, I got prestige mini box, I got special three packs with Andrew Luck card in it, you know, Andrew Luck RG3 card in it, something. Make it different, make it exciting, show some creativity. Again, the job is not that hard. The job is practically done by everybody else. It's up to leadership to inspire some creativity. Because most of these people that are doing the low-end work, they see A to B, they do their job, and they don't go over and above that. It's up to leadership of Topps, leadership of Panini, leadership of Upper Deck to say, hey, let's push the envelope a little bit more. I'll pay you an extra, I'll pay you for an extra hour or 2 hours if you can come up with something fresh, or here's this idea, execute it. But it doesn't get done because these guys at the top think they're King Kong and stuff like this. Anyways, don't overpay. The last one is for us as a customer. Don't overpay. And the way I do it is I bid early on eBay. I don't want to get involved in some emotional bidding war and be like, this dude outbid me. I'm going to pay more. Because like I said earlier, in terms of shipping cards, typically as a sports card collector, you're going to make multiple transactions, maybe a month, and certainly for a year, you're going to make lots of transactions, maybe 100 or more, maybe 1,000. And if you're consistently overpaying $1, $2, $3, wherever it is on each auction, then you're going to get whacked over the course of the whole year. And bidding early, some people think that, oh, you're going to pay more that way. I don't know. I think there is some philosophy, maybe on the rare cards. You might have to be there at the end. But a card that sells constantly, I typically just say, hey, I go look. The high price for the last 60 days is 50. The low price is, we'll call it 40. I'll come in there right at the middle. I'll say, hey, I'll put 45. If somebody outbids me, they're paying towards the high end. If I get it for underneath that, I get a good deal. And typically when cards are on eBay and you're kind of – the way I do it is I look at them, and if I already see one with bids and it's close to kind of that high price, I might not bid on it. Philosophy-wise, I might not bid on that card. It might be a 38 instead of putting 40. I might bid on the one down below that only has one bid and it's at 99 cents, but it might sell for 40. So I don't know if you're following what I'm saying, is that one up there where you put the bid in early might sell for 38, might only go for 39 because everybody's skipping it. It's already kind of at that price. So bidding early gets you out of bidding wars. And I think sometimes you just put your price in there. And as a buyer on eBay, the auction might get up to 38, 40 bucks. And it's like, I'm done. I'm not getting a deal there. So I'm done. And you end up winning it. And so I've noticed that has happened to me. For the cards that get traded a lot, a $10 card, a $15 card that's not all that rare, as often. So I think that's a decent strategy. Just put your price in, put a good price in, medium to low end price, and just try to hit it. And I think that will help you not overpay. Remember, cash is king in this economy. We're still people maybe having less trouble finding a job, but certainly finding a good paying job or a job where you see growth and anticipation and maybe salary growth and advancement opportunities. People still aren't seeing that in this economy. So cash is still good. If somebody doesn't take your offer in 1 month, chances are that, especially for expensive high-end cards, chances are it might still be there. If he was asking a little too much, it still might be there a month later, and he might be able to take your price then. So I think you can avoid, buying sets when they first come out as well. I think that's one thing to do. Topps 2013, people are paying, a dollar for a base card or whatever. And there's just so much of that stuff around. Certainly for some of the more rare cards and the cards that are much harder to hit. And the World Series relics, which aren't from the World Series, but those typically sell hot. And those are typically hot right in the beginning. They kind of stay hot. Because they end up in the hands of Giants fans and collectors, fans that have obviously high sentimental value towards the card. So those might be worth bidding on. And when a set does come out, you might want to be aware of those cards. But if you're not in the market for those cards and you're really just kind of a base card player or just an average, a rookie autograph kind of collector of an average player, you can wait. And certainly in the football, I think you could have waited. Certainly Andrew Luck had a great season. RG3 had a great season. But, everybody was touting these guys up like they were the next Tom Brady and Joe Montana and Michael Vick all rolled into one, kind of thing. So they played to expectation, maybe slightly above a lot of people's. But to the hardcore collector, people were paying prices for these guys like they were already in the Hall of Fame. So they're still going to have to come back next year. And when, as we've seen, you know, Sam Bradford and Tim Tebow, they were pretty hot. And now, you know, they're not as hot. And so, but you could certainly cook back up. I remember Matthew Stafford came out hot and was a really collected quarterback and kind of had some struggle. You know, the Lions had some struggles there. But he certainly looks like a quarterback that puts up good numbers. We'll see if he can turn the Lions around, but there's always time. My point is don't overpay. My last resolution is don't overpay and realize there's always time. If the guy's career, if he truly has a great career, you know, like a Jerry Rice kind of player, you'd have his whole career to collect his cards. And he got, even after he retires and everybody thinks Calvin Johnson's better or AJ Green's better, he still collects Jerry Rice card, although his autograph and his cards do sell for quite a bit. And, you know, obviously as you enter in the Hall of Fame and that kind of stratosphere kind of changes, but you might want to have bought some Jerry Rice cards before it totally blew up. And he got on Dancing with the Stars, I think, too. I think that might help your card values as well. That about wraps it up today, folks. Sorry for the lag. Well, we did a little bit of card stuff here, and you know, we do what we can here on the Sports Card Show. Some interesting things coming up soon. We've got the Industry Summit. I don't know. I just spent like 10 days or 12. I can't remember how many days I was in Vegas. I don't know if I'm going to go. I think I said that last year and I ended up going. So I ended up going. I didn't. My brother is going to be attending the event, and we'll have lots of people down on the ground there. And so we'll either kind of piggyback off what the information they have and we'll kind of discuss it on this show, or we'll actually call some of those people when they're in Vegas. My brother or Doug and Dan and lots of people down there, we'll call them and get their take on what's going on and things of that nature. And more than likely, I'll have a segment on our website where we kind of just aggregate everything that's going on, all the news stories and all the links and things like that. I'll probably put a page like that together as well as we get closer to that. But before that, we'll do a preview. Maybe on our next show, we'll do an Industry Summit preview. I know that if you get on Sports Card Live podcast, I know that they had Kevin Isaacson on earlier, and he's the guy that puts together the whole Industry Summit, and he had some good advice and good tips on there. Since I just spent 10 days in Vegas, I have some money-saving tips in terms of hotels, travel, how to get around, although I may not be the best. I tip well. I've had jobs. I think when you've had jobs where you've relied on the tips, you end up over-tipping, so I may not be able to give you good advice on that. You might be able to be more tighter on your wallet there, but I will be able to save you some money and recommend some restaurants and stuff like that. So I'll add that to our kind of a Las Vegas kind of thing. And if you're not sure if you want to go to the Industry Summit, you know, you still have time, I think, to register. You still could get in, I'm sure, even if it was after registry. I'm sure you could figure out a way to get in. But definitely it's worth going. Anybody that has any interest in the hobby, and I think Kevin said it himself, if you have any day-to-day interest in the hobby, even if it's just a blog, even if you're just a really, really serious collector that maybe have thought about selling some cards, or even if you just sell casually online, but it's a big part of your life, come on out to Las Vegas, have some fun, and that's what it's all about. That about wraps it up for today's show. Thank you very much for tuning in, folks. Hopefully everything is going well for you out there. And enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the NFL Combine. Enjoy whatever you're going to be doing. And again, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back soon. We are out of here.